there, and they have an outdoor market. It's very Slavic looking. The people are very Slavic looking. They are Ukrainians. There are virtually no Germans there anymore, but the architecture remains. Those homes that our ancestors built there on the steps remain standing, and they're beautiful.
They did well.
That's right. They did very well, and they continued that style mm-hmm. on the plains of Dakota. So it was very interesting. The people I was traveling with, we were all former North Dakotans, I believe, and we were struck by how much the landscape looked like the Great Plains, like North Dakota.
Like North Dakota.
Yeah, and it was a very spiritual trip for all of us, especially as each of us went to our villages and realized that if our parents or grandparents had not left, that would be our story. Mm-hmm. So there's an element of yes. It's a very humbling experience to yes. go there.
And too, as we get older, I just think back of, you know, my grandparents who came from over there. They were oldest aunt, and she was on the ship, and they were months on ships. They weren't over there in 3 days.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And the hardships they endured. We're just writing a book about yours truly.
Yes, I understand. April 2003, your book will be published.
Yeah.
I'll be anxious to read it.
And we're hoping, you know, she sort of put the skeleton, Joan did, and I've been filling in, and it is tremendously time-consuming.
It is.
Every minute I have. The cooking, for instance, the younger people you touched upon it, several of my nieces and nephews, apparently. I'm going to come and I'm going to write down how to make niebla or niebla, and would you do that? So slowly they're coming back to realize that, you know, ones like my sisters are gone, and then it's gone.
It's gone. You are the torchbearers right now. You, those who are the senior generation, you'll be passing the torch before long. And so yeah. it's a time-limited effort on the part of my generation to gather this knowledge. Mm-hmm. But there's so much more available in a written form than there was 25 or 30 mm-hmm. years ago. And of course, the World Wide Web has made the German-Russian community much more cohesive. Mm-hmm. We've all made friends of people we've never met via the internet because we share that same interest. Mm-hmm. But moving on to Brauche. Are you familiar? Do you know what Brauching is?
I have often wondered. Of course, now these old people who did Brauche, I don't know if there's any living, but I received the result of it.
You did.
Yeah, I had, my ears were just running. I never know after now, I don't know what it was. They were just running, not the inside, but mm-hmm. the outside, and crusty, and, you know, open source, mm-hmm. what it amounted to. They were just wet all the time. And I went to a doctor, and I was young, I was probably, the doctor couldn't do anything. And then someone said, well, Elizabeth, my mom's name, why don't you take her to, I think, Osper House? So we went, and I remember her. She took her hands and just sort of put them on my ear, saying something. I have no idea what she said because I speak a different German from hers. Mm-hmm. But she said, now you go home, and every day you say three Our Fathers and three Hail Marys to Saint Anne, and I'll do the same. And that's what I did. And in a probably about short time, maybe 3 days or so, it started to dry up. And I also had a doctor's appointment, and I thought, well, you better go, because after all, you... And so we went, and he looked at these ears, and he said, what are you doing? Of course, me and my mom lying, we said, oh, we're not doing anything. He said, well, you are doing something because they're healing, and they're not healing naturally the way this would heal.
Really?
Yeah, that's what he said. But he said, whatever you're doing, continue to do it. And so I continued to pray, and they just totally gone.
Mm-hmm. Did it require another visit with Mrs. Beekler, or was it just that one time?
I think we probably went twice. I think she just wanted to see what was going on. But they just were dry in a very short time. The doctor had given me some salve, which didn't do anything. So that was my personal experience.
Why would the family go outside of, you know, go have a remedy or cure outside of the home if they had, you know, like, you know, I grew up with Watkins liniment and, you know, I mean, do you remember your family having cures that they used?
Oh, we had all of those. Remember the green drops? They cured everything. And depended what your sickness was. It was either in water, either hot water or cold water, or you put it on a teaspoon with sugar.
Okay.
And so we used those a lot. We used plaster. When we had colds, lung problems, plasters, mustard plasters were put on our chests. But you have to be very careful not to have them too long, because they would burn. Remember, my sister had a dog plaster.
Oh, sure.
And then there was liniment, like a tablespoon every day.
Internally?
Yes. And then, now that I'm older, I look at direction and says, do not use internally, but we tablespoon every day, and you stayed well. We had lots of, we had tea, a lot, chamomile tea was another thing. Certain diseases, you either drank chamomile tea or you again had them put on. Now, my sister, just last year, she's... Her husband had sores, I can't remember where the sores were, and they simply wouldn't heal and wouldn't heal. So she took and laid that on his, I think it was hand, sore and his sore just wouldn't go away, doctors couldn't help it. And she said in about 2 days, it was practically healed.
Were there other things that went with this? I mean, prayers or incantations of any kind?
We basically did not pray, but my mother, not my mother, but this sister that I'm just sharing you, and she's about maybe 85, 87. She prays with whatever she's doing, or she just lays hands, which I have been doing. In fact, I made a week's seminar way back when, and learned how to pray, because we either said the prayer book prayers or we said the rosary, but we wouldn't pray out generally. For healing, we wouldn't lay hands on people and pray for healing. We most likely did it quietly, which we did. We prayed, I mean, what was, or with the family prayer, we'd pray for Aunt Mary who's got whatever she had or so on. But I do lots of, and some of it is hands-on, like yesterday I was spending time with a friend, she had cancer, some I left, she said, would you just lay hands on me? I do that. I did that in the context of massage a lot, to lay hands on people and pray. And you know, another thing that I've been thinking a lot since you asked me about this interview, you know what I see tremendously healing, which people, I think, have no idea? For one thing, I think touch. I mean, just touching people. Mm-hmm. The other thing I see a lot is affirming people. Quite a few, you know, I shouldn't say quite a few, but some people call me and just say, no, I just need to talk with you, or they're upset, they're whatever. And that just happened the other evening, and this young woman called and just needed to talk and say, oh, I'm down, and whatever. She just started to talk, and I started to respond and just sort of carried on in my own. And when she finished, she had tears to tell over the phone. And she said, I don't know what it is about you, but always when I talk to you, I feel healed. And I've reflected on that, and I have heard that a lot. And people say that to me a lot. Mm-hmm. Or they also mention, like, I was at the Saints. Mm-hmm. I don't claim to be worthy, but this gentleman, I have no idea who he was, but at the Saints, I massage at St. Paul mm-hmm. Baseball Saints. When he was up my hands and he said, "Oh, those hands are so beautiful, and they are such healing hands." Mm-hmm. Now, whether he experienced something, but I get that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I couldn't claim, but I do pray a lot with people and mm-hmm. pray lots for healing. And mm-hmm. I can't claim and say, oh, you know, all these healings happen. All I know is that maybe months remember when. How do I remember? Oh, that's, I think, where I am with it. But I am back in natural healing again. Mm-hmm. I had to walk. I did nothing in a wheelchair, and I have a real desire both for that, like you say. Years back is when I have wanted to start going back and asking people who are still alive and say, "What did you do? How did you do that?" One thing, because they came so far away, and they were mostly old people. Young people just care for lay hands on people for healing. It's been for years and years mm-hmm. back.
When you were a child living in that community, there was Mrs. Beigler that you identified. Do you know of any other people who were in her category, either in a midwifery role or any men who did bone setting or, you know, that kind of healing?
You know, there was a Lutskina is what they used to call her. And she, in the olden times, they did everything. They did massage. They didn't spend an hour like we do doing mm-hmm. massage. But they would do massage. They would do adjusting of bones. Mm-hmm. They would know what to give you for certain sickness. Another thing, not I think that camphor, camphor solid, mm-hmm. that was used a lot. Mm-hmm. I had asthma when I was younger, and one of these natural heat that I should take hot boiling water, put it in a pan, and then put a towel over me and the camphor solid that's mm-hmm. in it.
In the water, in the boiling water.
And mm-hmm. inhale that. Mm-hmm. So I just hung over it and then breathed that in.
Mm-hmm. Where do you suppose they got their knowledge?
Oh, I think that was from way back, mm-hmm. way back at home. Mm-hmm. Like my grandmother, I think, was a hand-me-down.
Mm-hmm. And who, I mean, if that's true, someone, they must have known, like you know, that you have, while you're not eager to call yourself a healer, you know that you have some healing skills. Mm-hmm. They must have known that also. And what I'd like to know is, you know, did somebody identify them and say, I have knowledge to share with you, like you're doing with your schools? I mean, how did they get trained?
I think it was just evidently what, and I can call my sister and ask any information, mm-hmm. Because I think she can fill me in with lots
that
of things.
That would be wonderful.
Because she has a good mind. Mm-hmm. She's about my 85-year-old. The other thing, and again, I remember my family doing that. Let's say we were out running around, and we would step into a nail, mm-hmm. or we had pussy sores. And she would take milk and put bread in it. And again, she made a, well, I don't know what you call it, a poultice, and put that on the damaged area. Mm-hmm. Because we rarely went to doctors mm-hmm. when we grew up. It was all these natural things that Mom did.
Mm-hmm. So there were the healing arts within the family that everybody just sort of knew to do.
You just picked it mm-hmm. up.
And then there were those areas where your mom's skill wasn't good enough for your ears, and clearly the doctor mm-hmm. of Western medicine, his skills didn't work either.
Didn't do a thing.
Mm-hmm. And so your mom knew, well, there is this Mrs. Beigler,
yes.
who maybe was even an immigrant herself.
Yes, she was.
Uh-huh. And so she might have gotten her training from somebody either in the old country.
Mm-hmm.
Of the healers that you had a familiarity with in Emmons County, were they all female or were there any males?
All that I can remember, they were all women.
Okay. And did they also serve as in midwife capacities, do you think?
Oh, yes. Maud was a midwife. When you got babies, Maud would come to the house.
What was her last name, do you know?
All I know is Maud.
Okay.
Because all of us were born at home.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my sister's children were born at home. Maud was there. And my mom would sometimes deliver if it was stormy and you couldn't get mm-hmm. to these people, then mm-hmm. mom would do deliveries.
Mm-hmm. So your mother had some midwifing skills,
yeah,
too.
And she did it sometimes for her own children.
Oh, my, yeah. How many children did your mother have?
Well, we were 13 of us.
Sure. So she knew what the process
yes.
was. Okay. And all born healthy?
Yeah.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. I had a little brother that died when he had the whooping cough. He was about one. But all dozen of us lived until... My brothers all died younger, but the oldest one of them died at the age of maybe 80. The other two maybe in their 60s and one maybe in their 50s. But all my eight sisters, I think my oldest sister is probably 92. And the youngest is probably...
Beautiful.
And my oldest sister, the one that's in her 90s, she had, all in all, she had 21 children. She had 16 still living. The rest were about a year or two. No, so it was 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. So five died within a year or two, but they were alive.
Mm-hmm.
And all the rest, 16, one of them died.
She is still alive.
And she's still alive. Oh, and none of my family's in nursing homes. They're all taking care of themselves and their husbands.
In the Strasburg area?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yes.
And in their homes?
Yes.
Yeah.
And one of my sisters just had to stop gardening. She had the garden in, but around maybe July or August, she got a heart attack. She came home from the hospital and she had, I don't know, bypass surgery. I don't know how many bypasses. And in about 2 weeks' time, against the doctor's order, she was out in the garden and doing hoeing and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So she can't wait till spring.
Mm-hmm. And so they go to traditional doctors for
yes.
that kind of care, but do you think they still do a lot of their own self-medication?
Magdalene still does.
She, like, what would she be doing?
Well, like her husband who had these
uh-huh.
sores. Of course, the doctors couldn't do anything.
Uh-huh.
And then it's when she put that compo every now and then that maybe there's a grandchild sick and she remembers one of that.
So wonderful, because then that's how it's passed on.
And when I go home, I need to, and as I say, I always want to bring a recorder, and either I don't bring the tapes or I forget the recorder, because I know the time is limited.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Magdalene's the sharpest of them.
Do you think she'd be willing, if I could find someone to interview her, do you think she'd be willing?
Oh, she'd love it.
Mm-hmm. What's her full name?
Mastel, Mastel.
Uh-huh. And where does she live?
You know, I can call and give you her phone number.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Does she live in?
Magdalene Mastel.
Uh-huh.
Area code 701.
Uh-huh.
493-2473.
And where does she live?
Italy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. And she lives in her own home?
Yeah.
Okay.
And she's sharp.
That's, how old is she? 85, you said?
I think she's about 85.
Okay. I'll just stop.
Just like the Germans?
It is, and actually, Katie wrote the history. Katie Wald wrote the history of that church. I've forgotten what her maiden
Wald.
Name is.
Wald is from Italy?
No, she's from Hague.
Oh, she lives Walds in Italy.
Yes, there are Walds in Italy.
Do you know Longs?
Yes.
Well, my niece, Madden.
Uh-huh.
Is married to one of the Longs.
Susan is married to, and they have triplets. Aren't they the ones with the triplets?
Yeah.
They rented my farmhouse for a few years. So then are you related to Susan's, let's see.
Madden?
To Mrs. Schmidt? Do you have a sister named Schmidt?
Schmidt doesn't.
Okay. Then I'm thinking of the wrong Susan. Okay.
Name.
Okay. I'm thinking of the wrong Susan.
Yeah.
Because that girl's, Susan's grandmother, was the midwife when my brothers were born. My parents lived in the Zealand area until 1944, and then they moved to Berlin. Like many did. The Longs, the Aberleys. Mastels,
when Mastels were some of the first ones around Strasbourg that moved to Edgeley,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like there was kind of an exodus.
Mm-hmm. There was
mm-hmm.
from that community, and then from the Wishick, more of the evangelicals that moved were the Ketterlings and the Justs.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Like my dad and my uncles moved in 44. But I worked in Edgeley when I was in high school at an implement dealership. So I know that I met your brothers-in-laws. No, it was Heidinger Implement.
There's a Miller from Wishick, and it's got a TV station here. Or it's Coon Rapids, that area.
Oh, really?
Because he called me maybe about a year ago. He had never met me, but he had heard lots about me.
Mm.
And believe it or not, he had me on for a whole hour.
Really?
It was so neat. And he's German. And we talked about the Wishick sausage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go home, I might go to Edgeley and then go to Linden, where my sister Mary Betch lives.
Okay.
And that green sausage.
Mm-hmm. Well, George Jest, who makes the Wishick sausage, is my dad's second cousin.
That right?
Yes.
Well,
and now here's another
sausage.
Here's another small world story. I have George Jest's niece is my good friend Char Wiest. And she is another person I'll be interviewing. She is a healing touch practitioner. She's a licensed HT practitioner. And
mm-hmm.
and you two are my primary candidates for the part of this project where I want the readers to understand that Brauche continues today, that it was not witchcraft, it was not something to be suspect, that it continues today with practitioners who
mm-hmm.
take that mandate, who recognize that calling,
mm-hmm.
and learn what they can about a person's body, their bone
mm-hmm.
structure, their muscles, and try to help people in contemporary life.
Oh, that is so true.
Have an awareness of what they eat, how they feel, what they think, the
mm-hmm.
connection with the higher power, how all of that
mm-hmm.
Contributes to their illness or their wellness.
Yeah, that's very true.
Uh-huh.
I had a niece, one from Wishick, that's Holzer.
Okay.
My sister Catherine, married to Joe Holzer. And she's my oldest sister. And they had a daughter who went on a fasting because she thought she was fat. she really wasn't what she thought she was. Mm-hmm. She didn't eat, and basically she was dying. The doctors had literally given up. She could no longer eat. And she went to one of those people, and she's alive and well today, and told her, I think it was, and I have to check that with Calvin, I think it was oatmeal, a teaspoon or a tablespoon of oatmeal.
And so this happened in recent years.
Oh, this recent years, mm-hmm. Yes.
And so she took her to someone who had a healing gift.
Yeah.
Because Western medicine couldn't help.
Yeah, okay. And I'm going to call my son, Catherine, and see what it was. Because
right.
That was my sister's uh-huh. daughter. And see uh-huh. what I can find out. I also know, also this woman, you know, and I don't know where we got it, maybe from calves or cows, but we used to have these things would get on our hands. We'd call them vatsna, warts, I guess you'd call them. But you couldn't get rid of them. And I know my sister, Caroline, her son had some of those. And she took it to one of those women and just, they practically fell away within no time at all.
Mm-hmm.
Another time, I know one of them also took vitamin E. I have that information. But I'll call my sisters and
Great.
See what I can find out.
Great. Well, we might have to have another session
yes.
here. We really, I don't want to take more than an hour of your time, so we've got about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you? I'm going to massage this gentleman, you know, all these hard things when they were gone on with working, I was working there. And so I dropped it, I maintained it. So it took me to the hospital, and I got that thing in the hospital. Nowadays, you wouldn't put people in the hospital. They'd just say, well, you know, go on home. But he put me in there, and every day he came and said, what happened? What happened the day you think? And I told him that I wanted to go and see the eye one. And I said, my spirit wouldn't go. He made me promise that I would take it because I have no high school, I have no college. And he made me promise that I would take high school GED test. And he let me out of the hospital about, I don't know, a week in the hospital because I couldn't promise him. And then he said, well, then you stay here. And every day he came and he said, well, can you promise? I'd say, no. He said, well, then stay. And I thought he'd probably be there forever. So one day I said, yeah, I'll take that GED test. And I did. I felt I should not be in where I was cooking, dining room work, mm-hmm. with superiors. And then I took the test, and then I took the entrance later. You know, she just gave me a massage, and she didn't know. I didn't say I've got this or that. I just got to receive this healing, and wanted to help you. You want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And I still go to workshops. Last week, I went to Fargo, took a very strenuous two-day seminar. It's body work. It's not strictly massage, but it's another way how you manipulate, you know, the body. Oftentimes, the problem may not be in the back. The problem may be up here in your pectoral
uh-huh.
muscles.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, and I've been so successful helping people. Yeah. It's more of a push, deep, deep work. And I continue, it means I'm 73, and I continue to just try to get educated more in massage so I can help more people. I mean, massage is tremendous, but there are body works out there that are just tremendous. Like, here's an example. You know when you get frozen shoulders?
Uh-huh.
Well, this gentleman was there, and he could raise his arms, a young man about 40, this high. Both arms were frozen shoulders. This is how high he could reach him. In a half an hour, he had both arms that he could reach him back and forth. That's what that body work does.
You have another new avenue open. a new avenue of healing that has presented itself for you. And here you are at 73 when others are thinking retirement, and you're looking at a new door that's open for you and how you can help other people. Mm-hmm. And certainly your higher power has wanted you to do this, because look how strong your arms are. I'm looking at your hands. They're not even swollen or arthritic looking.
Oh, no, they're not arthritic.
No.
I don't think I've got arthritis in my body.
Well, there's a reason. I mean, you have a job to do. The higher power is saying, sister, you're not done, and here's a whole new area of learning for you.
Yeah.
I have a question. As I read about your mother and her illness, saying, I need to have a massage, how did you even find someone to do it? Because when I think back to the 1960s, massage parlors had a very, very shady reputation. And as I read in your biography portion here, you know, I remember the fight you had. I remember it very well.
Oh,
so how did you even find someone to give that massage?
Well, Mom knew there's that woman down the road.
Was this in
Aberdeen,
Stratford?
South
this was
Dakota.
In Aberdeen, okay.
And she's dead. In fact, that's very interesting because, and I don't remember all of that, but there was a little girl there when I took my mom there. Well, I learned that this little girl's mother didn't want this child, and so the grandmother took care of it.
Okay.
And she came to our massage school.
She did?
Yeah, and I didn't know because she was a little girl when I came there. And I talked about this woman in Aberdeen, Rose Obermeyer, who massaged me, and she broke down and she was crying. She said, I never heard anybody talk as nice about my grandmother as you.
So her grandmother didn't have community support in what she was doing, you think?
Well, those days I think they did, but it's just, you go and who cares about it? You just know you go there, but
okay.
Who cares?
Okay.
But anyway,
did she consider herself a healer or a Braucher? Or
she did massage.
Okay, so had she had any training, do you think?
No, I didn't ask.
I mean, I wonder if she also had this calling and somehow knew what to do and took whatever.
I knew about massage. There was a gentleman, a blind man in Aberdeen also that I searched down. But he also, he went to this Swedish massage school for the blind in Chicago. And he helped me to get a 500 or 600 hour correspondence course in massage.
Uh-huh.
And then this gentleman helped me, here's $5. He did all of that for free for me. He was so good to me. So that's where I got hands off. And then when Mom died, I went to Fargo, North Dakota, and there was another blind man who was taken down. I went weekly for further. I always felt what I do, I wanted to do good.
One more question about, my parents didn't get to go past eighth grade either. I mean, that was a very common thing. My mother's 83, but her younger...
you didn't go to school those days.
Right. I guess her brother, who's maybe now 70, had the opportunity to go to high school but didn't. And so of her family of 10, one sister went to high school. One sister and one brother went to high school, the rest did not. So when you say you didn't go to high school, I get it. You know, I mean, I understand why you didn't. It wasn't because you weren't smart. It simply wasn't done.
Well, and you had the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Who would carry on the farm?
Right.
And who'd have the money, 13 miles to town?
Mm-hmm.
That was the other end of the world.
Even if it didn't cost to go to school, you had to pay for room and board and food. That's right. I mean, that's why my parents couldn't go.
Yeah.
And my father, the reason his children went on to high school and college and advanced degrees is because he was denied. I mean, he is one who wanted to go to high school and was recommended because of his high scores, and his stepfather said, no, he's just going to be a farmer. And that shaped my father's view of education. That's why he moved his family to another county where we our grade school was a half mile away, and then he provided cars for his, you know, mm-hmm. eventually when I went to that high school there was a bus, but there wasn't when my siblings graduated in 1957. But that shaped his view of, we were all going to college whether we liked it or not, because he didn't get to even go to high school and that denial of it. But not everybody wanted to, you know, not everybody even thought it was necessary. Yes. But where did your self-limiting beliefs come from when that physician said to you, you need to get your GED?
You know, it probably happened, you know, I lived with those educated sisters. Sisters of St. Joseph are very highly educated. And people who had education were up here, mm-hmm. and the little dumb farmers were down here.
Okay.
And I think that's probably where that came from. Mm-hmm.
And do you think that is not only something you felt here, but maybe heard as a child, you know, that that's why priests and nuns were held in such high esteem, physicians, you know, people even outside the mm-hmm. Catholic community, if they had an education of any kind, they were sort of mm-hmm. elevated, put on a pedestal, and,
mm-hmm. and... You know, I think in my home, I don't think there was an issue made of it. I think it was something... I did put lots of heavy things on myself.
Okay.
I've lost lots of it. But I was always going to be pretty, quite perfect. Uh-huh. I mean, I wasn't going to sin, and I had a high goals for
yes.
me.
Okay.
And I think maybe I put this on myself because, I mean, the sisters could write nice letters, they could write, and when I entered England, well, in school we spoke English up to the 8th grade, of course, but we whispered in German.
Uh-huh.
I usually have to be, I was just,
in school.
I may not speak German, I must speak the American language. That was the punishment, usually after school.
And your parents would not have challenged that teacher teacher was up here and you had a peasant existence.
I don't think they really ever found out because I got so good. I said God planned it, got me ready, milking and writing uh-huh. for massage. I got so good I took 3 pencils at once, and when that was finished, we're about a mile from school like you, and we'd run home. Hurry up, get undressed, so Mom didn't know we were late, because I think in those days, the teacher was always right.
Yeah.
So you can say
anything. Well, that's, you know, I think it's a very common thing. I think that for our ancestors, when they came, they came here actually fairly well educated. But the first generation had to work so hard
yeah.
to get established, and the second generation, just being able to go to grade school was
mm-hmm.
a big deal.
That's
and
right.
So there wasn't, they didn't have lofty goals for you
yeah.
at that point. What made you decide to go to the convent?
Oh, that was, now I'm public school product, but in the summer we had sisters for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And man, we were gods themselves in my own mind. Again,
mm-hmm.
that's my own. They weren't really gods, but they were just, oh, they were so wonderful. They were very nice to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just seeing them may have been some spark. But I remember as a little girl, that was my goal to become a sister. I had no idea how I just was going to do it. Then when I got into my teenage, of course, men became more important than I put it. I knew I had to make a decision for the convent. And I'm very, very grateful.
Mm.
I am so grateful, yeah.
How did you choose this order?
I had a stepsister. My mother got remarried. Well, my father died when he was 42, my mom was 42. I had a sister, a daughter. Firstly, I didn't know the difference between sisters.
Sure.
They were all sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I came here. And again, how wonderful.
Well, Do you have the support of your order in the work that you're doing?
Oh, no, I'm really great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now they think I'm great, but I had probably, basically, I stood very much alone. And what happens is, in crisis, many times people don't come for it. But for probably about a year, I did massage and I'd be crying. I felt so, Jesus was very important. And I, you know, we're at St. Catherine's all day and some evenings and you get very lonely. I didn't say I can't go, but the message was very, very clear every time I asked. That was the message I got. Another one wouldn't take it.
In your heart, do you believe it was because of your massage mission and that they didn't embrace that?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Oh, mm-hmm. Definitely.
It's been a long, hard road. I mean, occasionally I see or read or hear someone who went to you, and then I'm reminded again. You know, I remember you going before the city council in Edina and, you know, getting, because I've lived in St. Louis Park all these years. And, you know, how difficult it was. And yet, what you have done to legitimize massage.
Yeah, when I look back, I just think, my heavens, not only was I babbling. One place which was sitting, I'd go to the blue park there, could I rent it? Well, what work do you do? We massage. We massage. For the first few classes, school class that we had, many students did not tell their families they came to a massage school because massage was... So, massage become very reputable. But it was hard.
Oh, my, yes.
I mean, not only did I battle city council, but two judges. I had to appear before two judges. And there were people who wrote to my community or called them and said, you need to get rid of her.
But the sisters didn't... revoke or how whatever I mean, you could remain in the order. Who made that decision? Apparently no one pursued
ousted. Except one time I did write a letter during this time that I was going to leave the convent, but I forgot to sign since I had to come down. Then one of the sisters put a letter to, you know, which would have gone to Rome, say I'm leaving. They had the nursing, and when I talked you're massaging and massaging men. I'm a nurse and I never even gave a back rub to men as a nurse. And I was forbidden to massage men. And I was doing the clergy in Fargo. I was doing practically the business. I've got a lay woman, she's married. Lay woman, that's different. You're massaging. So I mean, talk about. But you know, one of the nice things is that it's like God is almost, I don't remember individuals what they did, and that is so wonderful. And the other, I think, well, that's where they were, so that's where they were.
That was their reality at that point, and hopefully they've grown. And,
yes.
And then whatever took you to the St. Paul Saints?
Well, the Saints called and said they want to do fun things. And they were wondering if I would start, with a massage. Well, first I got excited, and then, but you know, nobody would sit down at the Saints for massage the first few times, and I'd even give it to them for free, because all they wanted is for them to sit on this chair. If you go behind the door, I'll do it, but on the public, forget it. It's for free. No, thank you. And I had another friend, she did massage and I did it together. And nobody, we would keep massaging each other just so they saw what it was about.
Yeah.
And it took quite, and if anybody would sit down, I'd have them there for half an hour, as long as they stayed, just to let people know. And then slowly, they started to come.
Mm.
And now, we don't even have to ask anymore. They
just line up. Yes. Well, you're not through with your mission. You keep opening schools, and aren't you amazed now that you don't have to you don't have to twist anybody's arm to let you do what it is you're being called to do anymore, because it's now become so legitimate. And
yeah, and people still ask me and say, would you come and work with us? Work with you? We've got 5 schools, and we've got, I think, 5 or 6 clinics. And and I still am very, very busy. Like, all our new classes, all the 5 schools, I go and spend 3 hours, like when it's coming. What I like to do is, what I do is establish ethics, morals, that you either massage or you don't massage. You know, you are nice to the clients. You're not out there doing massage therapy. I say, certainly, all of us need bread and butter. And then not to... I try to set standards.
No, what I just heard you say is exactly what I've read about Brauching through the ages. A, you're an instrument of the Lord. B, you're not doing it for the money. You're not doing it for the personal remuneration. You're doing it because this is a calling, and you're calling upon the Triune God to assist in this healing. And, you know, you're there to be quiet and let the Spirit work. Those are 3 of the things that, from what we in our research can glean, that was the mandate of a Braucher. Then the 4th thing that I think you're doing already, that you're doing in a more sophisticated way, the old Brauchers, even, I mean, the Pennsylvania Dutch perform a form of Brauching. So that was our relatives back in Germany who came here while we went to Russia. Okay, so you can, if you think of that time period. So they brought healing practices to Pennsylvania. Our ancestors took their healing practices to South Russia. But that if you were one of those gifted persons, not only was your mandate to heal, but to identify other people who have that gift, and your job was to share that knowledge with them so that it could perpetuate. And that's what you're doing in your schools. You are a Braucher.
Yeah. You know, another thing is, you know, I hug practically everybody. And that's been a sore spot way back. You know, I believed in it. I still have a passion for it. And what I have discovered is the hug. It's like I'm finished massaging. And so I say, you know what? I need a hug. Like, people fall on their arms. And oftentimes they break down and they sob. And I feel that is tremendously healing. You know, and I just started thinking about those things. But that hug is very, very important. And I've never, nobody's ever said, well, I don't want a hug.
Was your family of origin a touching family?
No. It was very... It is something that happened inside of me. They do it now. But, I mean, I'd come home and I would say, I'd hug my brother, and he'd say, and then he would like just say, Marcus, would you really hug me? Then he'd go, but my family, they were not happy. It's just something that started to happen in me. And I think it's because I felt people needed it.
Practically
every time.
No.
Well, sweetheart, this was wonderful, and I'll call Magdalene.